The following shiur is recorded, edited, and presented to you by Kol HaLashon. We wish you an enjoyable and meaningful time listening.
Torahway, Northwest London, Thursday, the 10th of September, Chof Aleph Elul, Rabbi Adam Edwards, Parsha theme.
Good morning. Nice to be back. Parshas Nitzavim. So, we see at the beginning of the parsha, Moshe tells Klal Yisrael that Hashem is inducting Klal Yisrael into the Bris. He's going to be Hashem, their God, and they are going to be his nation. But then, straight after this declaration, Hashem turns to a slightly uncomfortable, unrelated topic. What happens if somebody in Klal Yisrael decides to violate the Bris? Right? Unfortunately, it might happen that somebody does not decide to keep the Bris. So what's going to happen? So we turn to source one. For those of you viewing or listening at home, source one is in Devarim, Perek 29, verse 19. And the beginning of the pasuk says, Lo yoveh Hashem tzeloyach lo. You know what? Hashem will not be willing to forgive him. Hashem will not forgive him. Rather, what will happen? His wrath will burn against this sinner, and terrible curses will befall him. Right, not so nice. Doesn't sound so nice, but it's also a little generic. Right, if somebody sins, Hashem punishes him. We've heard this sort of thing before. It's not new. Not a chiddush. I do something wrong, Hashem will punish you. Not the first time we've met such a concept in the Torah. But then we do see something new. Something that we don't hear anywhere else. Or we don't really hear anywhere else. We're told that Hashem will rain down fire and brimstone, bringing total destruction and desolation. Desolation, as we see it in source 2, which is Pasuk 22. Kemahapechas stone v'amora. Desolation. The Torah says, just like what happened to Sodom and Amorah in Hashem's wrath all those years ago. Sulfur, salt, scorched earth, blackened fields, and utter absence of life. It's a haunting visual. It's also an incredibly uncommon visual. There are plenty of descriptions in the Torah of devastation and punishment in the Torah. But this is the only place in the entire Torah where the Torah makes a comparison to the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. So the question is, why here? Why in Parshas Nitzavim, when it talks about somebody who does not keep the bris and the punishment that will befall such a person, why here, all of a sudden, does it start talking about the punishment of Sodom and Gomorrah? Is it just a handy image of total ruin? Or is there something about the story of Sodom that is being echoed in our parsha? So what I'm about to go through with you, for those of you who have heard me before, I'm a big fan of Rav David Foreman, and this is based on his Mahalach. As you know, the way he likes to build up a Mahalach is just based on the Pesukim. There's no fancy business going on here per se. It's just an analysis of the Pesukim. So that's what we're going to look at this morning in the short time that we have today. So that's the question here. Why here does the Torah decide to use the comparison of Sodom and Amorah? Is it just a random, seems unlikely? Or is there particularly a comparison, a connection between Parshas Nitzavim here and the Parsha of Sodom and Amorah? So obviously we're going to have to take a closer look at the text here of Nitzavim and see if there's something else that points us in the direction of Sodom. So let's look a little bit further at Parshas Nitzavim at this particular point. So the Torah begins by saying, here in Parshas Nitzavim, maybe there's a person or a family or a tribe who doesn't want to follow Hashem's bris. What does it say? It says, source 3, which is again in Devarim, Perek 29, verse 18. And it will be when he, such a person, who doesn't want to keep the bris, hears the words of this oath, that he will bless himself in his heart, saying, I will have peace, even if I follow my heart's desires. I'll follow my heart's will, and I'll still be fine. I'll be fine, even if I don't keep the bris. I'll be fine. Why is he so sure that he'll be fine? Because of these rather cryptic words, "Lemansos harava etatzmeya," which we're going to translate for now as "because the well-watered will sweep along the parched." Why is he going to be fine? Because the well-watered will sweep along the parched. Oh, okay, that's why. That makes sense. This last line, obviously, is quite a cryptic metaphor. Clearly a cryptic metaphor. And the truth is that there is a plethora of meforshim about what this few words means. There's a Rashi, there's a Ramban, there's a Sforno, there's a Samson Fall Hirsch. I'm sure there's others talking about what do these few words mean. Just as a digression, let's go. We're going to talk about a few of these before we go with the Mahalach that I want to go with. What does Rashi say these words mean? Rashi says, because this word "tzfos" is a very unusual word. So Rashi says the word "tzfos," well watered, is a euphemism for being drunk. And it's referring to sins committed by accident, without thought, as though they were committed by somebody who was drunk. And this word "samea," parched, refers to sins committed deliberately to satisfy some appetite, just as somebody who is thirsty drinks deliberately. Therefore, what does Rashi say these words mean? What's the sinner thinking in his mind? He's saying in his heart, he can do whatever he wants. This will have the effect of God treating any sins committed by accident the same way he treats sins done deliberately, presumably because he would have been happy to do them deliberately. That's what the sinner is thinking in his heart. He can do whatever he wants. Because God will treat the sins committed by accident the way he treats the sins done deliberately. So he might as well do whatever he wants. That's how Rashi understands it. The Ramban explains it as the following. He says, well-watered refers to appetites for which no one should have any natural desire. That's what it means, well-watered. And parched refers to appetites for which everyone does have a natural desire. And therefore, the Ramban explains the following. The sinner, by letting his heart's desires dictate his actions, will indulge so fully that same food that he won't get any satisfaction anymore from normal desires, and he will develop new appetites for which he has no inherent natural desires. That's how the Ramban explains it. So we're going to go... We're going to go with the Samson of Fall Hirsch. He argues that well-watered and parched, which you actually see in source 4, being the Samson of Fall Hirsch, he argues that they're metaphors for the righteous and the wicked. How do we understand the verse now? He understands that the verse means the following: the righteous will sweep along the wicked with them. So what's the sinner thinking in his mind? That means that the sinner is essentially thinking something like this: I can do whatever I want and I won't suffer any consequences for it. Why? Because there's a bunch of righteous people, and I am one wicked person, and Hashem has promised them peace and prosperity and lots of good things. So he thinks to himself, what's God going to do? Give them all the good stuff and not me? Is that what's going to happen? When it rains, it's going to rain for everybody. When there's peace, it's going to be peace for everybody. My little patch of land isn't going to suffer a famine when everybody else is prospering. Enemies aren't going to drop a bomb on my house but leave everybody else alone. So by his logic, I'll get swept along in the tide of everybody else's blessing. Hashem's not going to destroy them just to get to me. I'm safe. I'm okay. I will get swept along in the tide of blessing of everybody else. I'm safe. That is what it means. Again, well-watered and parched are metaphors for the righteous and wicked. The righteous will sweep along. They'll drag along even the wicked with them. So right, this guy's not a great guy. It's true. He knows full well that he's sinning, but he smugly reassures himself. He blesses himself in his heart. That's what it means. That's what the pasuk means. He's barich bilvavo lemor. He blesses himself in his heart. He's quite happy. He assures himself in his heart that he's fine. He's totally fine. He thinks he's going to get away with the greatest scam of mankind. He thinks he's cornered God. He's got God's hands tied. He believes that he has, like I said, he's got the scam of the century. He's going to get away with it. But we're looking for the connection here with stone. What's the connection with stone? Is there anything about this person, this Rasha, that specifically reminds us of the story of stone? But before we go back to Bereshit, which we'll do in a minute, let's look at one more thing here in Nitzavim that is quite interesting, that's going to build on the connection with Sodom. It's very interesting. In the midst of describing this sinner's punishment in Nitzavim, we get this very strange digression where the Torah tells us about the different groups of spectators who are looking at this Rasha, the people who witness the devastation that Hashem brings down in Source 5, which is Devarim, Perek 29, Psukim 21 to 24. In Chof Aleph, it says, Va'ama hador ha'acharon, and a later generation, B'neichem asher yakumu ma'achreihem, your descendants will rise after you, V'hanachli asher yavo me'eretz rachoka, along with the foreigner who comes from a distant land, will say, go to Chaf Gimel, the Amru, Kol HaGoyim, and all the nations will say, Al Ma Asa Hashem Kacha La'aretz HaZos. Why did Hashem do so to this land? Chafdalud va'amru, they will say, an asher arvu et bris Hashem. It's because they abandoned the covenant of the Lord, Hashem Elokei Avraham, Hashem, God of their
Kol Halashon.
Fathers. So it's interesting. So they will conclude, they will say, it's because it must be that those who were punished abandoned the covenant of their God. There's just no other explanation. We have to wonder, why did the Torah need to tell us about those future generations and foreign nations who are going to sit around, have a bit of a schmooze and a discussion about these punishments? It's a very interesting addition that the Torah tells us about these people who are discussing these punishments. We know a sinner does a sin, Hashem punishes them, that's the end of the story. Why do I need this narrative about people of later generations sitting, talking, discussing why the nations will say, why did Hashem do this to the land? And they all say, it's because they abandoned the covenant of Hashem. I mean, it's a very, very interesting and unusual discussion. It must be, of course, that it's very important. It must be, because the Torah goes into so much detail, it must be vital, but at this point, it's not clear at all why it should be. So the question is, does this remind you of anything from the story of stone? Are future generations and foreign nations part of that story? I think that both of the elements we saw, the sinner who expects to be treated like the righteous, and the children and foreign nations who are watching from the sidelines, are actually very reminiscent of one particular part of the story of stone. And I'm thinking right back to the very beginning of this story, when Hashem first reveals himself to Avraham, what he plans to do to that city. So let's go back to right beginning of the story, source 6. The story begins with Hashem's soliloquy, when he's talking to himself. He knows that he's planning to destroy Sodom, but there's one thing he's not so sure about. And he says in source 6, which is Bereishis, Perek Yudches, Psukim 17 to 18. And he says, Hashem Amar, Hamechase Ani Me'Avram, Asher Ani Osa. Hashem says, he's got a question. Should I conceal from Avraham what I am doing? He's got a question. Should he? I don't know. And in Posuk Yudches, he says, and Avraham will become a great and powerful nation, and all the nations of the world will be blessed in him. Abraham has this destiny, this great destiny ahead of him. He's going to be the inspiration and the source of blessing for the world. So yes, I am God. It's true. I definitely don't need to explain myself to anyone. But maybe, he says, maybe here I should. Maybe I should explain myself to Abraham. Why? In Source 7, which is Psukim Yudches to Yudches, for I have known him because he commands his sons and his households after him. That they should keep the way of Hashem to perform righteousness and justice. Abraham is going to teach his children to follow me, to do what's right. And for that to happen, God seems to be saying, I need to explain to him my ways. I need to show him my ways. He needs to understand how I think. So it's true. I don't need to explain myself to anyone, not even Avraham. But for Avraham to continue my mission, for Avraham to be the person and his children, to be the ones who are going to be the source of blessing to the world, yet in this particular instance, he needs to understand how I think. He needs to understand what tzedakah and mishpat are. And so God reveals to Abraham his plans to destroy Sodom. So let's stop here. Did anything we just read sound familiar? At least one thing for sure. God describes the role of Avram and his descendants as Unvarchu bo kol goyim ha'aretz. All of the nations of the land will be blessed through him. Was there any mention of blessing in the Tzavim? Yeah, there was. The sinner is described as Bizbarich Bilvavo Lamor, that he will bless himself in his heart, saying. So, number one, there's a blessing in both of these stories. But there's something very different about these brothers. Think about their direction. Where do they start and where do they end? Well, in Bereshit, Avram is the source of the bracha, and through him, everybody else gets blessed. So the blessing starts with Avraham, and it goes outwards. What about in Yitzavim? What's the direction of the blessing there? It's inwards. V'his barich bilvavo lemor. It almost suggests a kind of inverse relationship between Avraham in Bereshit and the sinner in our parsha. Okay, but that's not so exciting. There's lots of bracha throughout the Torah. It's a pretty common word. It'd be rash to read too much into a connection just because it mentions bracha in two parts, in these two stories. Is there anything else that's familiar about this section? I think there is. How exactly are Avraham and his descendants meant to be a source of blessing to the nations of the world? How does that work? A simple question. We know that Avraham and his children are meant to be the source of bracha. What's the spiritual mechanism of how that works? We don't actually see anywhere in the Torah an explanation of what that means, but I think the pshat is pretty simple. It's a simple mechanism. Avraham and his descendants would stand for the right values, and the rest of the world would have the opportunity to learn from that example. Avraham and his descendants would be the beacon of morality, of values for the entire world. They see Avraham's greatness and emulate it. And in doing so, when they emulate it, their own good deeds would earn them blessing from Hashem. That's the source of bracha. It's the beacon of light that Avraham and his descendants would be. When you learn from it and you emulate it, then you get the bracha. That's what it means to be a source of bracha from the world. I think that's pshat. Now, if that's true, then who is Avraham really responsible to teach? So who's meant to learn God's ways from him? So we know that Hashem expects him to teach. Banav ve'es beito achrav. His children will come after him. Is that it? Not really. He will teach his household, and through them the lessons will spread outwards to kol goyei ha'aretz, the nations of the world. Who were the spectators in Parshas Nitzavim? Who was the audience remarking about the devastation? B'neichem asher yakumu me'achreihem. Your children that will come after you, and kol ha'goyim, all the other nations. So it's the same people. Avraham is charged with teaching the right and the just to his descendants and to the nations of the world. And in Nitzavim, the Jewish people's descendants and the nations of the world are the ones witnessing this Sodom-like punishment. So there you've got a very strong correlation. And we're not done yet. What happens next in the Sodom story? Hashem decides to reveal his plans to Avraham, and Avraham responds with a challenge. He says that it wouldn't be right, it wouldn't be fair to destroy the city. Why not? In source 8, which is Bereshis Yudches Chaf Gimel, Avraham says, Ha'af tispe tzadik im rasha, will you even destroy the righteous with the wicked? Chalila lacha, Avraham says, what a terribly unjust thing to do, to destroy a whole city, punish the righteous within it for the sins of the wicked. If anything, he says, it should be the other way around. The wicked within this city should be spared because of the righteous. Is there anything familiar about Avraham's words? Ha'af tispe tzadik im rasha? Tispe, of course. What did the Pasuk say? Pasuk says, the man tfos harava et hatsmeya. The well-watered will sweep along the path. It's not just the words that's the same. The concept is exactly the same. The sinner in our parsha was reassuring himself he'd be safe. He said, I'll be safe because he'd be swept along with the righteous. Because Hashem doesn't punish the righteous just to get to the wicked. It's exactly the same argument that Avram is making. God doesn't punish the righteous just to get to the wicked. Only it's not really the same, is it? It's the exact opposite. Because they're trying to accomplish the exact opposite. Avram is arguing on behalf of Sodom. He's trying to protect the others. He's saying you can't destroy the Sodom because you've got righteous people. And the sinner is saying you can't destroy me because there's righteous people. He's twisting the argument to try to protect himself. It's a total perversion of the logic. So what have we got? We've got all the links between these two sections. We've got the link of the bracha. We've got the link between the children and the foreign nations. We've got the link between Tispe and Tzfos, the wicked being spared for the righteous. So the reference to Sodom in Nitzavim is shaping up to be much more than just a handy image. There's something much bigger going on a much deeper reason why the sinner in Nitzavim is receiving the punishment of Sodom. The question is, what is it? What is the link? And with this, we will conclude. Let's go back to Hashem's plan for Avram for a minute and think about it. What did Hashem want from Avram? He wanted Avram to be a great nation, for his nation to be a beacon of inspiration, for Avram to be a giant role model for the rest of the world. The nation would keep the Torah, they would follow in his ways, they'd pursue tzedakah and mishpat, and everyone would look to Avram and his children for moral and spiritual guidance. But the truth is, there's more than one way in which you can get, or there's more than one way in which you can teach the world righteousness and justice. People can learn literally from those who are great and virtuous. They can be inspired by the good that others do. But unfortunately, people can also grow by seeing firsthand what cruelty and selfishness look like and can be repulsed by that. Seeing how the lives of the morally bankrupt are empty and sad, and seeing how God ultimately deals with those people as well. And in that sense, the immoral can also be role models for how not to live. And so in Nitzavim, we sign on this dotted line and agree to be Hashem's nation. And God says the bris is an agreement. You're going to be my role models one way or another. If you keep the Torah and you pursue tzedakah and mishpat, if you follow the path of Avraham, then you will fulfill your end of the deal in the right way. And that's what we're all hoping for. But there is going to be a chance that somebody's going to say, I'm not interested. And you know what? I'm going to try to get out of it. And I'm going to hope that the people can protect me because they're all going to be righteous. And I'm going to say, I can scam my way out of it. And instead of carrying the weight of others, I'm going to make them carry my weight. And I'm going to cheat the system and make the merit of everybody else work for me. And that's not just a regular sin. That's the rejection of the mission and the corruption of it. But you know what? Not going to work, because he's still going to end up being a role model. Those people he's supposed to teach and inspire, he's going to teach and inspire them. He will. But he's going to teach and inspire them by Hashem showing what's not meant to be, what it's not going to look like, and what punishment he is going to get. So what's the bottom line? God invites us to be his nation and to show the world his ways. How that happens, that's up to us. Inshallah.
The shiur you've listened to was recorded and edited for you by Kol HaLashon. You're invited to continue listening at any time to all the shiurim and drushos in all topics by all the rabbanim on Kol HaLashon.